All right, so let's go to 1 Kings chapter 2, and I know it's been a couple of weeks, but just to refresh our minds, in our last study, we were looking at chapter 2, really. We were picking right back up where we left off, but we saw David providing to Solomon some requests and some advice that he's providing to him at the beginning of chapter 2. Then we also noticed that in doing this, he's trying to get Solomon ready for what he's getting ready to take on, which is a big thing. And there's going to be here at the beginning some challenges that he's going to have to deal with. And so David is trying to help him along that way. And then we ended last class, looking at how David has passed at this point. He's gone on to be at rest with his fathers in the city of David. David served for 40 years as king, and for the most part, a good reign, but also some challenges and some sin that occurred during his reign. In this study, we're probably not going to get to all of it, but this is what I have prepared. But this is where we're looking to head, is Solomon removes the remaining threats to his reign, of his kingdom. Good to see you, sister. Solomon, so we're going to look at that. He's going to take some of the advice that David has provided to him, and he's going to begin to enact those things. He's also going to do some other things. And we'll see those as well, especially as it accords with Adonijah, his brother. Solomon's kingdom, by the end of chapter 2, is fully established, firmly established, as he's ready to reign. And then we'll see Solomon praying for wisdom, and God's graciously blessing him with that in chapter 3. And then we'll see a demonstration of that wisdom also there in chapter 3. As we move over into chapter 4, we will notice how blessed his kingdom is. We're not going to do a verse by verse of chapter 4. We're going to look at it more generally, but we'll talk about some aspects found there. That's where we're heading. So if everybody will go ahead and go to chapter 2. So this is 1 Kings chapter 2. And we're going to go on back to verse 13. This is just following the death of King David. And it's going to start off right away. I think we got into this a little bit last time. But Adonijah is going to go to who? Bathsheba. You'll notice he goes around Solomon to his mother. And what does he ask for? He has a special request, kind of an odd request, but what is it? Okay, he wants to marry this young lady named Abishag. Now, we're not given any kind of romance story, are we? That they're star-crossed lover, I shouldn't say that word, a star-crossed, what's the word I'm looking for? Couple, there you go, that they have this whole legacy behind. It's just out of the blue, seemingly, he goes to Bathsheba and makes this request. Now, who is Abishag? Who is she? She's a, yeah. Yes, so if you go back to chapter 1, the text explicitly says, there isn't any kind of hanky-panky going on. She's just simply there to help him. And that's what she does for David until he passes. And so again, what's the connection here between Adonijah and her? Well, there's not one as far as what's written. So let's talk about the next section. We'll I'll talk about maybe why he's doing this. No, I'm not sure. I'm sure that it's not spoken about. Yes. Yeah, that's my point. That's my point. The text doesn't give us any of that. So we're really left to wonder why he selects her. Why he... And again, he's going to Bathsheba, not to Solomon, to make this request. So let's kind of move forward here, and we'll come back and discuss a little bit of this. So he goes and makes this request. He asks Bathsheba to go to Solomon and to make this request of Solomon. And so that's what you get in verses 13 to 17. Okay, verse 19, if I can get my words right. Verse 18, Bathsheba says, okay, I'll go do it. Verse 19, she goes to Solomon, and she makes this request. Let's read just a little bit here. Go to verse 20. So Solomon invites her in, she sits down, and then she says, I have one small request to make of you. Do not refuse me. You'll notice that's the same kind of language that he used, Adonijah used with Bathsheba. Don't deny me this. Can you give me this? I don't want to make too much of the language. It's an interesting turn of phrase, isn't it? Don't deny me. Do this for me. You'll see Solomon does actually deny her. She makes the request. She says, so the king says, make your request, my mother, for I will not refuse you. Well, he should wait just a minute to hear what the request is. I'm sure he doesn't expect this at all. But you will notice she says in verse 21, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as his wife. Simple request. Right? Doesn't seem too controversial on the surface. But notice Solomon's response. It's very strong. So King Solomon in verse 22 says, why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Now, my guess is, and this is a little bit more informed, right, that Solomon at least is like, why is he asking for this? Like, he doesn't see any kind of romantic connection between them. And seemingly for me, that's my opinion about it. He's like, why are you asking this? And so he goes on to say, and then he'll make a further thing here. He says, ask for him the kingdom also. Now that's sarcastic, isn't it? A little sarcasm there. A little biting sarcasm to his mother. For he is my older brother. This is what Doug had mentioned. He's the older brother. And on his side are Abathar the priest and Joab the son of Zeruiah. So Solomon is pretty strong, isn't he? He's like, what are you asking for? Why so strong a response? All right, so in the background of all this, we have the history of what Adonijah already tried to do. And Solomon, you remember what Solomon did? He let him off the hook, didn't he? Because Adonijah had come to him and he said, I can see your king. I'm paraphrasing. But if you go to chapter 1, you know, he seemingly comes back repentant and is like, you know, he kind of throws himself on the mercy of Solomon. So Solomon says, okay, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to kill you. And so that's in the backdrop. Now, do we know fully why Solomon reacts this way? Can we say with a definitiveness? No, we're left to guess a little bit, right? We can have a little bit of an educated guess, but it's still a guess. So why? Why so angry? No, I'm going to agree with you because I do think this is political. I do think that Adonai has already proved himself to be a political animal. He tries to use political tools to get what he wants, which is still what? I think he's still after the throne. He's still trying to position himself. It's not unheard of that a king, just because you're a king today doesn't mean you're king tomorrow, right? And so maybe I can get in line here that I set myself up. Also, he's the older brother, right? That already gives him some political power, right? We remember Jewish culture is inheritance, blessings. The majority goes to the older brother, and that's who he is. So he has that. He already has a backing, as Solomon points out, of the high priest. That's a pretty important political figure, isn't it? And Joab. Who's Joab? He's the commander, right, of the armies. And so he's powerfully connected. Now, as we continue reading, Solomon's going to deal with those two individuals. So this seems to me to be a political move by Adonijah. Yes.
We've seen this is him on the political side, but it's also Abishag would have gone to him as part of the kingship, because if she was her husband or his father's aide, if you will, so now all that would fall under his rule.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second.
Try to step in.
So let's talk about Abishag. Why is she important to all of this? I'm guessing. So please take this as an educated guess, is that this is a political move. What makes her a political pawn? Why would she be important? Okay, so my understanding historically, even though David did not marry her, she was not a wife or a concubine, because of her close proximity to David, and she was very close, she would still have been considered to be a part of his house. Now, if we can backtrack a little bit to Absalom. Do you remember what Absalom did as, in a sense of rebellion against David and also humiliation against David? After David has run out, you remember he flees Jerusalem. What does Absalom do with the household of David that remains? And the wives. In public view. He had relations, if you will, with David's wives and concubines as humiliation against David. So there was a political play. None of this calling this moral, right? We're not saying any of this is moral, but that was one of the political tools that would be used at times among factions. And so with Abishag being a part of the household of David, for him to marry her was another keystone in his desire for power, his political placement. So, if I had my best guess, that's what's going on here. Questions? You know, you can go and watch some pretty crazy stuff on TV. There was some crazy stuff going on here, too. And people not behaving very well. Poor Abishag, who is just, for them, a political pawn, if that's what's going on, you know, can't, what about her, right? It doesn't seem to me to be that a lot of people care about her.
Like hundreds, maybe.
Yeah.
So it doesn't say later whether he married her or not, right?
So I don't think Abishag probably ever married.
Okay.
I don't think that would have happened, because of her placement with David. Again, is that right? No, but for their day, at the same time, she would have been well taken care of. being in the house of Solomon. Yes.
So, what is the Shumanite?
It's the people from Shuma. I haven't researched that, so I'll have to get back to you about it. Anybody research Shumanite?
They weren't Jews.
No, I don't think so. They might have been a biracial group, kind of like the Sumerians.
Like in the New Testament, isn't there a Shumanite woman who asked, is that the one who laid the crumbs under the table?
I think that was a Phoenician.
To the Shumanite woman.
What now?
Isaiah.
Who?
Elijah goes to a Shumanite woman.
Yeah. She's the one. Isn't she the one that has the son? It's her and her son. And he comes and asks for a cake, and she makes the cake, and then he blesses her so that her flour doesn't run out. I think that's the Shumanite woman that Elijah... Is Elisha or Elijah? We'll talk about that later in Kings. But good question. I actually don't know the answer to that. Anybody ever studied the Shumanites? Okay. So, any other questions that I may or may not answer? All right. So, let's continue reading here. So he makes this request to Bathsheba. Solomon reacts very strongly to it. Notice as he continues, let's go down to verse 23. Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, God do so to me and more. Right? That's an often... way of making a promise, if you will. You're going to say, may God do that to me and more. You'll see Jezebel makes a similar statement against Elijah. After Elijah has the 400 prophets of Baal killed, she says, may the Lord do more to me if tomorrow or whenever if Elijah's not dead. Well, that's a way to strengthen your pledge. And so he says, God, do so to me and more also if this word does not cost Adonijah his life. Now, therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and placed me on the throne of David, my father, who has made me a house, as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death. So King Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and struck him down, and he died. And so there ends the life of Adonijah. Yes, sir. Are they from the land of Shuma? Oh, I was right. Okay. So that's a Jew, then, it should be. Okay. So all of our speculation was kind of wrong. What now? Oh, yeah, at this point, the kingdom's still united. Thank you, Roger. So we learned there's a town in Issachar, was named Shuma. Y'all are laughing. Like, I had to get... No, I think it's more he sees the deception of Adonijah. I don't see it that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she just felt like she was just doing what she was asked to do. She just passed, like you say, she just passed along a message. And this is mom. She doesn't seem like it, though, because I think if she understood the political ramifications, she would have just told him no. Because she's not, Adonai is not her mom, right? It's not his mom, sorry. And he tried to steal the kingdom away from her son. So, and she helped to protect his throne. So I think if she had seen him as trying to supplant her son, she would have. I'm like, Yeah, and maybe that's right, but she says, give me this request. Don't refuse me. So that sounds like to me she was really, maybe she just thought, well, let him have a bashag, right? If he's really wants her, then why deny him? Maybe she thought it was a way to kind of to placate him, right? Maybe now he won't be so politically driven against my son. But all of that is speculation. I don't know. Were you going to say something? And maybe so. Maybe so. It's something to think about. But the Bible just doesn't provide us all those answers. So we're left to kind of guess. Let me see. Oh, was there anything else here? But so ends the life of Adonijah. So here's another one of his brothers who have come and now have perished along the way. This family, whom, just as a way of reminder, if you go back to 2 Samuel chapter 12, what did God say to David because of his sin with Bathsheba? Do you remember? Yeah, he said, the sword will not depart from your house. And we see it, and these things are just going to get worse, not better. And so from this point forward, David's line is filled with violence and dispute amongst one another. To the point, you get a grandmother who's killing her grandchildren. So it gets bad. All right. Any other questions? All right. Let's move forward. I'm quickly running out of time here. Let's go to Abiathar. We're just going to quickly talk about this. But if you go to verse 26, Solomon begins to enact some of what David has said to him. He says in verse, the text says, and to Abiathar the priest, the king said, go to Anath, to your estate, for you deserve death. But I will not at this time put you to death, because you carry the ark of the Lord God before David my father, because you shared in all my father's affliction. So Solomon expelled Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, thus fulfilling the word of the Lord that he had spoken concerning the house of Eli at Shiloh. What was that about? You remember? Well, he would remove them from being priests, right? He would remove them from the priesthood. God made that promise a long time ago. He has fulfilled it, right? At this point, Abiathar is the last of Eli's line to serve in the priesthood, seemingly, and to be high priest. You can go back to 1 Samuel. I can give you the verse here. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 27 to 36, talks about, you remember Eli had two sons. They were completely wicked. Eli allowed them to do what they did, and so God told them, because of that, I'm removing you and your line. And so ultimately that plays out here. And so we see Abiathar being removed. All right, the next guy that we will notice is a guy named Joab. Man, Joab has a long history. I'll talk about this and we'll probably have to stop. But let's talk about Joab. Who is Joab? We talked about this a little bit, so I'll try to skim through this quicker. Who is Joab? He's army commander. Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, he was one of David's mighty men, right? The others, he served David, he traveled with David, he fought with David. He did some good things, but you remember Joab's history is not great, is it, all the time. He did some wicked things. We talked about some of those before. He murdered two men. He killed them outside of wartime. Remember who they were? Both of them start with A. Abner and Amasa, both were murdered by him after David had told them not to do that. He killed another one that starts with A. I'm sorry, there are three. I left this one out. Remember the other one? David said, don't kill him. Absalom. He did not like your name if you start with an A. But he killed all three of those. He also shed innocent blood during the time of peace. He broke peace. And yet had gotten through all of that until Solomon became king. And if you go to verse 28, we see how his punishment is dealt out. Not only did he do that, I can't forget this. When Adonijah tried to supplant Solomon, what did Joab do? Did he go along with Solomon? Nope. He chose Adonijah over Solomon. Now, what's interesting is back when Absalom tried to do the same thing to David, Joab stayed loyal to David, even though he killed Absalom when David said, don't do that. But this time he chose Adonijah over him. Let's go to verse 28. When the news came to Joab, for Joab had supported Adonijah, although he had not supported Absalom, Joab fled to the tent of the Lord. What is the tent of the Lord? What is that? Tabernacle. Remember, the temple's not been built yet. He fled to the temple, or sorry, to the tent of the Lord, and caught hold of the horns of the altar. Why does he do that? You're seeking trial, right? I need my day in court, in other words, is kind of what you're doing. And so it does become a place of refuge for most. Does it become a place of refuge for Joab? No, he'd already been found guilty, hadn't he? Word gets back, verse 29, to King Solomon. They say, Joab has fled to the tent of the Lord, and behold, he is beside the altar. Solomon sent Benaniah. Benaniah is going to become an important guy to Solomon. Benaniah is going to take over Joab's job. I'm sorry, I missed my place. He sends Benaniah, verse 29. He says, go and strike him down. So Benaniah came to the tent of the Lord and said to him, the king commands, come out. But he said, no, I will die here. He's chosen his place of death, his execution. So Benaniah brought the king word again, saying, thus said Joab, thus he answered me. The king replied to him, do as he said, strike him down and bury him, and thus take away from me and from my father's house the guilt for the blood that Joab shed without cause. The Lord will bring back his bloody deeds on his own head, because without knowledge of my father David, he attacked and killed with a sword two men more righteous and better than himself. Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of the Lord, the commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa, the son of Jether, the commander of the army of Judah. So shall their blood be back on the head of Joab and on the head of his descendants forever. That's a pretty big pronouncement. Not only is he pronouncing judgment on Joab, but he's actually sending judgment on his family. Verse 34, then Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, went up and struck him down and put him to death. And he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. And thus ends the life of Joab. Let's see.
say anything about that.
Yeah, if you go back and read it, I don't have time to look at it, but okay. If you go back to Second Samuel, it talks about how David found out. David's very upset and distraught about it. You remember Absalom's the one that gets his hair caught in the tree, and while he's there, and that's kind of it for Absalom, and Joab kills him. Good question. Any others? Bloody affair, isn't it? Bloody affair. Yes, ma'am. So it's like putting a curse on a family in a sense. Now, not like a real magical curse, but their family will now always have that reputation on them, right? It's going to be very hard for them to outgrow that. You think about, like, I'm trying to give a good example, like Cain. For what Cain did to Abel, that kind of curse stayed with him and his descendants forever, right, until the flood. And so it's just a pronouncement of judgment and how severe it is. And there's been times when whole families have been taken out because of one person's sin. So if you go back to Joshua, chapter 6. Okay, in chapter 6 of Joshua is when they go into what city? Yeah, but it's not AI. Before AI. Where do they go before AI? Y'all know this famous one? They go around 7 times. Where? Jericho. They go into Jericho. They're told to take nothing. But what does Achan do? He takes stuff. Then they go on to AI. They are defeated AI. And they can't figure out why. Why are we defeated? Why are we defeated? Well, come to find out, after they go through this whole process, it gets down to the house of Achan. And he's found guilty. He's hiding the stuff in his tent. What does God do as punishment? All of them. And so the whole family essentially is judged as guilty there. That does happen at times. But here I think it seemingly is more of a reputation or a mark laid against this family of Joab. Good questions. Let me real quickly, can I just deal with Simei and then we'll call it a day. If you go down to verse 36, you have another request of David being fulfilled. In verse 36, there's a guy summoned to Solomon. What's his name? Simei. Simei. Who is Simei? Real quickly, let's historically, what did he do? What was his crime against David? Yeah, so when Absalom does his mess and David is fleeing, this guy Simei comes out and he starts throwing rocks. I'm not trying to really stone him, but as a way to kind of almost curse him. And then he starts actually cursing him with his mouth and saying all these evil, bad things about David. As David is he's getting out of town. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so David goes away. And, of course, what we know what happens is eventually David comes back after they've dealt with this rebellion of Absalom. When they come back, they find a very different Simei. What's he doing when they come back? He's begging for forgiveness and mercy. And so David says, okay, you don't deserve it, but I'm paraphrasing. But you don't deserve it, but I'm going to show you mercy. And so he allows him to live and to stay where he's at. And so now Solomon is going to deal with Simei. That problem is still there. Verse 36, he calls Simei and he says to him what? He says, build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there. I'm going to let you live, and you can live at peace, but what can you not do? Don't go past Kidron, right? You stay there. I'm going to let you stay there. You build a house. You live there, whatever, right? He seems to be kind of a wealthy guy. I mean, he was of the family of Saul, right? So he has servants. And for two years, he lives there. Everything's great. But he gets antsy, doesn't he, when a couple of his slaves run away. What does he decide to do? I'm going to get them. It's interesting to me that he doesn't send other servants to go get them. Why don't you do that? But he himself decides to go. He goes and gets them. He comes back. And things don't end well. If you go down, I'm kind of summarizing some of this. And, yeah, and that's probably what happened. If you go down to chapter 2, if you go down to verse 40, tells us that he arose, he saddled his donkey and went to go get those servants. Then he comes back, and Solomon, verse 41, was told what Shimei had done, that he'd went to Gath and now had come back. So Solomon calls for Shimei. And the king says to him in verse 42, what does he say? Did I not make you swear to give your pledge, right, by the Lord? And Solomon warned you, saying, know for certain that on the day you go out and go to any place, whatever, you shall die. And you said to me, what you say is good, I will obey. Why then have you not kept your oath to the Lord, and the commandment with which I commanded you? The king also said to Shimei, verse 44, you know in your own heart all the harm you did to David my father. So the Lord will bring back your harm on your own head. Similar language to earlier, right, with Joab. It's coming back on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. The king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck him down, and he died. And so you have the last of these measures of justice poured out on the last of these individuals, which is Shimei. And then, as we close out, oh, I'm sorry. This is, if you want to see these charts, they'll be online, hopefully tomorrow. But this is Shimei. And, you know, Solomon gave him opportunity. All he had to do was stay home. He'd just stay there. And he could have lived the rest of his life, but he chose to disobey, and it cost him his life. And then as we close chapter 2, we'll just close to the end of verse 46. So the kingdom, and this is interesting terminology. So the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Why make that statement? Why is that important to kind of give that the book end of chapter 2? From this point forward, we really see the establishment of the kingdom of Solomon play out, right? He's reigning and ruling. Why make this statement at the end of chapter 2? And this really is Solomon's last kind of remaining political opponent, kind of dealt with. He's dealt with all of his political enemies, seemingly, at this point. And now he can just reign. He's not having to look over his shoulder constantly at any kind of treachery. Just kind of fascinating. That's what the writer of Kings decides to do here. He puts that kind of stamp on it. We've kind of ended this first chapter of Solomon's reign, which is a very bloody one, right? This one's pretty bloody. Now, from here on out, do we see much blood in the kingdom of Solomon? Now, he really reigns in a time of peace throughout his reign. And so thus ends this bloody affair. Any questions or comments?
He was a man of blood. He was a man of war. And yet Solomon starts out with this kind of stuff, and then he turns right around from this and builds a temple. And man, his first few couple years there, he shed blood all over the place too.
Yeah, because, you know, Shimei lived there for 2 years. So this isn't like a short, like, month window or whatever. This is two plus years that all this is going on. So this didn't just happen all one day. It wasn't like first day on the job. You know, like the president comes in, any new administration, and they have a list of things they want to do the first day. You know, they always give those political speeches. I'm going to do this on the first day. Well, this is not like one day. This took time to do all of these things. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing, too, as we close out, sorry, I've said that a few times, I better do it, is really the kingdom at the end of David's reign was pretty turbulent. Since his sin with Bathsheba, from that point forward, you had a constant kind of problem going on in the kingdom. And we could go through and list them all, from what happened to Bathsheba to Amon and his sister and what he did and what his brother did to him, right? And then we go to Absalom's rebellion, and then it's just been this turbulent affair, to even at the end of David's life, you have Adonijah trying to supplant his brother as king, and this really brings all that to a close. And you're going into the early reign of Solomon, you're not going to have that. It's going to be a time to rebuild and to build new things like the temple. Any others? Thank you all so much for your kind attention this afternoon. We will close there, and I'll